I can hear you, but I can't hear me.
Yeah, I can hear you, mate.
Oh, hold on. Yeah, it was just the faders.
You had that look that we all recognise, where you're like, oh, shit.
I think the reason the audio wasn't coming through is because I had the volume at zero.
The Germans, and they're in trouble. Alcantara couldn't do it. Lineker probably could.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the Final Countdown, a podcast looking back at great finals within the game of football. I am Lewis, here with my co-host Adam.
Hello.
And we get to celebrate the 1970 World Cup with an actual World Cup taking place.
There we go.
I am ready and excited to suck at the teat of World Cup trivia and nostalgia.
Oh, made this really weird.
I'm just trying to mix it up, you know, have something as a different intro for a change. So, Adam, I will stop talking and hand over to you.
Don't talk anymore. No more mention of teats other than describing you, your big teat.
That was deserved. Yeah. I'll take that.
So we come to the 1970 World Cup, which I think this is probably in my top three World Cups.
I'm so glad you said that, because I have a personal favourite World Cup, but I think this is, and you know, I think this is the World Cup. If you had to dilute everything that makes a World Cup great, I think 1970 has it all.
It's strong. It's also strong because it's in probably both of our top threes, having that we don't have personal experience of.
No.
Because the other ones, I imagine, certainly the others of mine, are ones I have personal experience of.
Yeah, exactly the same for me. If my top three favourites...
We should do that at the end.
Yeah, that is good.
It's good.
We should do that for our 50th episode. I love the fact that we let our audience in on our brainstorming. We're just derailing the podcast to actually have a meeting.
When do you plan this, guys? Yeah.
We are flying by the seat of our pants. I think this could be a good 50th episode. But anyway...
Yeah, sorry, yeah. 1970 is, you're right. I think the first thing I've got is it was the first World Cup to be broadcast in colour.
The vividness of the green grass of Mexico.
Yeah, incredible. And everything about it. And the World Cup kind of became synonymous with colour and all the nations of the world, the supporters, the kits, you know, everything that the World Cup really hadn't been about because of the black and white,
you know,
kind of presentation of it. But also the football that was played in this World Cup in particular. So in contrast, we've talked a little bit in the last few weeks about the dourness of the 62 World Cup.
As in lack of goals and lack of attacking football.
Absolutely, yeah. And the kind of tactics that came in. 1970 changed that.
Goals. Goals were the order of the day.
Goals. So it's the highest average of 2.97 goals per game. The highest average ever bettered.
Yeah. I did not know that. I didn't know it was the highest scoring. I just remember that there were a lot of goals. But, well, I say remember. I use that in air quotes because, my feeling of the 1970 is that it was attacking flamboyance.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, that's certainly how it's presented. But actually, when you kind of drill down, that is actually what was going on. So Brazil in particular set that tone. But there are other teams that, you know, scored a lot of goals. Italy scored a lot of goals. Germany scored a lot of goals.
Right.
Interestingly, and we'll cover this a little bit because it's too big a game to not cover, but England were the only team to not concede three or more goals against
Brazil. Is that right? Kept it tight at the back. The good British way. 4-4-2, keep it tight.
How else do you play this Brazil team?
Yeah, sure.
Really. But anyway, so we'll back up and kind of start from the start. So the first World Cup held with broadcast in vivid colour. It was also the first World Cup tournament held outside of Europe and South America.
Of course, yeah.
So this was held in Mexico.
Yeah.
Which, interestingly, 16 years later would host again. Do you know why it hosted again? 16
no,
years
I knew they'd done it twice, but I have no idea why.
Right, Colombia got the 86 World Cup.
Okay.
And fell in, we'll cover it, I'm sure, but they fell into financial difficulties.
Ah, right, okay.
And then they were like, oh, we can't do this. Decision was made and Mexico stepped in. And then, you know, there was an earthquake, which we'll cover in 86 as well, but we're jumping ahead. So this was the first Mexican World Cup, and they knew how to host a World Cup.
If there's something, and having been to Mexico, given as very much a tourist, but if there's something Mexicans know how to do, it's party. They know how to have a good time.
It screams of Arriba and sombreros.
Yeah.
And, you know, singing and dancing for no apparent reason.
Yeah. Tequila on tap.
That's the one.
This is what we want.
Absolutely. So the final itself was between Brazil and Italy, largely considered to be one of the best kind of watches of a World Cup final, probably particularly for neutral.
Yeah, sure.
It was just a great
quality on show between two teams.
Absolutely. Italian fans might not agree with that, but that's generally the thing. It was also the first final that marked the first time that two former world champions met in a final.
Ah, that's good.
Obviously, it's happened since.
Sure,
because obviously there have been more world champions, but this was the first time where elite met elite.
Yeah.
So I thought that was quite interesting. Interestingly as well, Italy were reigning European champions. Which I didn't know.
No.
They won the Euro Championship.
We can save that for our Euros final.
That's
countdown
right,
podcast.
Yeah, yeah. So they won the Euros in 68, which is interesting, that being that England obviously had won World Cup 2 years before. So there'd been a bit of a transition. England was still strong, and we'll come to them. But this was the top of Europe against the top of South America in the final in Mexico.
It's interesting, isn't it? Because obviously the World Cup was much smaller back then, in terms of the number of teams that managed to compete. It is amazing that we managed to get this many World Cups without the two kind of former champions meeting.
Absolutely.
You would have thought that it's more understandable now with the amount of teams that there are and the amount of chances for an upset. But back then, what, 16 teams in this World Cup?
Yeah.
Like, you would have thought beforehand that you would have had two world champions meet. But
you would, wouldn't you? I mean, I guess there was less world champions then.
Oh, yeah, true. Yeah, very true.
In the sense that we were talking Italy, Brazil.
Uruguay.
Germany. Is that it?
England,
that's it.
Yeah, that's it. So, okay.
But yeah, so this was the first and probably the best. For the first time, we mentioned last week, the World Cup finals, referees could issue yellow and red cards.
It's happening, everyone.
That's it.
We're getting the modern football.
So do you remember the name of the referee that introduced them?
I remember he's British. Yeah. I can't remember his name.
Ken Aston.
I was about to say Atkins.
Not bad. Aston. Yeah, so he had introduced them and FIFA had adopted them a couple of years before, and World Cups had yellow and red cards. Now, here's an interesting fact about that. No player was sent off in 1970.
That's got to be one of the only tournaments where we've not had someone sent off.
Never happened since.
Is that right? It's the one and only tournament that since they're introduced.
I thought that was amazing.
That is, yeah.
That is pub trivia at its best.
That's a really good one.
Yeah. So, yeah, red card was there in the referee's pocket every single game and never used. Bookings, but no red cards in the 1970 World Cup. Interestingly, the officiating of the opening match, commented by some media as overly strict.
A
lot of media were like, oh, this is a bit over the top. Not necessarily the bookings, but the free kicks and the whistle-happy referees. But it did set a standard of discipline. If you remember 66 and 62, there have been
brawls and
Pelé in particular got kicked out at 66, injured in 62. So there was an element where FIFA were looking to protect attacking players.
Yeah.
And so this opening game was kind of largely rumoured to be FIFA's directive.
Yeah,
to
sending out a message.
Stamp on it early on. And ultimately, it did protect the skillful players because they really are the stars of the 1970.
Which ultimately is what you want. Like, obviously, you don't want it. I know people talk about, you know, how goalkeepers are overprotected these days and you can't do anything, which, you know, there's both sides of the argument I agree with. But in terms of, attacking players, you don't want Pele kicked out of a tournament. You want him defended. You want to see a good contest between a defender and a striker. Yeah. But you don't want, they've kneed him in the leg for the fourth time this game and now he's limping. Okay.
Yeah. Absolutely agree. Especially if you're a ticket holder.
That's what I mean.
Yeah.
Broadcasting it around the world. Come and look at our incredible footballing tournament.
Yeah.
Oh, that guy. He is the world's best player, but he currently needs crutches.
Yeah. He currently needs crutches.
He's walking around the pitch. That would probably be allowed back then as well.
Yeah, it probably would. He's on the bench. Just sat there. That is the setup. England, just to mention them, as reigning world champions, still a very, very good team. Sir Alf Ramsey was still the manager. Bobby Moore was still the captain. Bobby Charlton was still the star player. So
the core were there.
Yeah, a few different names, but the core were the same. But their preparations, do you remember this? Do you remember what they were hampered by?
No memory.
Bobby Moore was arrested.
Oh, of course, yeah.
For stealing a bracelet.
Allegedly stealing a bracelet.
Well, yeah, I mean, he was cleared. I actually have written allegedly.
There you go.
Allegedly stealing a bracelet from a jeweler's shop the week before the World Cup started. There was a big hoo-ha about it. Eventually, he was cleared. But yeah, it was all a bit of a mess. You know, the captain... Harry Kane getting arrested.
I know, yeah, it's not ideal. But I like the Bobby Moore thing. I remember watching a documentary about him, and I think it changed as well the way he was perceived back home with right. the allegations.
Right.
And he felt like the attitude, especially of West Ham, towards him changed slightly he came back from this World Cup.
No way.
And he's quite sad about it because he felt like it tarnished him. And he's very, or was very vocal about the fact that West Ham kind of turned their back on him a little bit. And they didn't honour him in the way that, you know, a West Ham legend, World Cup winning captain would be honoured today.
I remember, he was been honoured far more since he died.
Yeah, exactly.
He's one of those, you know, people that have become posthumously more honoured than they were when they're actually alive.
No, exactly. I think that's definitely
the case. It's a sad thing, really, isn't it? I find Britain's a bit like that in general.
We like to kind of, deify
chop
anyone that...
down
yeah, exactly,
until they
when
die.
They're gone.
Yeah. But there we go, other than Jimmy Savile. I was just thinking about the fact that that was a flip. They deified him and then he died.
And then crucified him.
Yeah, they crucified him when he died, and it doesn't make a difference to him.
No, that's true, yeah. One should have come before the other, but back to the football.
Yeah, sorry about that. You chopped that one out.
I just didn't expect you to go there, but that was great.
The look on your face was great.
I was genuinely speechless, which doesn't happen often.
That's rare. Right, okay, into 1970 again. So the England-Brazil match was huge.
Yes.
Because reigning world champions, one of the best teams in the world, against largely the favourites for the title. Brazil were at full strength. Pelé was back and fit and probably at the peak of his powers at the age of 29. Amazingly, there was no seeding in the draw.
Right. So you could...
Which is how England and Brazil ended up in the group together. I mean, that's a real group of death.
Yeah, sure.
Not this kind of, you know, pansy, like one from pot A, one from pot B. Like, if they're in pot B, it's because they're crap.
Yeah.
Whereas
yeah.
this was two absolute headliners. And ultimately, they both qualified from the group. But the England-Brazil game, which came, I think it was the second game for both teams, was absolute... It's a great game, actually.
Is that right?
Yeah, some of the highlights are brilliant. Obviously, the tackle by Moore, which is
referenced in the song.
In Three Lines. That's a great tackle. Jairzinho, who was the top scorer for the tournament. I can't remember if we've said this on the podcast. You and I have talked about this. So Jairzinho set the record in this tournament. He scored in every game.
Yeah, that's right. We have referenced it on the pod, but it's worth repeating.
Yeah, so amazing record and never been repeated since. So he scored in every game of the tournament. Not just every game he played in, every game that Brazil had. So incredible record. And his goal, again, a great goal, was the deadlock breaker against England. The only goal of the game.
Yeah, I thought it was close. I couldn't remember if it was 1-0 or 2-0, but I do remember England 1-0. Managing to... put up a fight against otherwise rampaging Brazil.
Well, they had, so Jairzinho scored, you had the bank save. Which Pelé references as the greatest save he's ever seen, which is why it got called the greatest.
He was already celebrating, wasn't he? He believed it was in.
Yeah.
Yeah, complete disbelief. Incredible. Banks pulled it off.
Only left super standing. Pelé! What a save!
So yeah, that was in that game as well. So it's quite a famous game from that point of view. And if you watched Fantasy Football League in the 90s, then you'll also remember Jeff Astle's miss. Do you remember Jeff Astle?
Doesn't ring any bells.
So I think he played for West Brom, but he came on as a sub and he had an unbelievably good opportunity to square the score.
Yeah.
And he missed it. And Fantasy Football absolutely rinsed them for it. And they actually got him on. You remember they used to have people knock on the door? And they used to like knock on the door and Frank Skinner would open it and be like, "It's Jeff Astle!"
Oh, no.
And Badil would be like, "Shut the door!"
I mean, fair play to him for being game enough to come on.
But... Jeff Astle used to come on and sing at the end of episodes. It's so... I mean, everything about that show was random, but...
Probably the most famous miss of all, though, I think, was done by a famous striker that we're both very familiar with. In a 1970 World Cup game involving Brazil.
Hey!
You're not showing that, are you?
It's all right, Jeff. Jeff, calm down.
Again, looking for Astle and Hurst. Have another! You bastard!
So anyway, so that was the England-Brazil game. Brazil ultimately marched their way to the final, as did Italy. Before we get to the final, I thought it's so much in this tournament you can mention. I just thought a couple of honourable mentions that kind of stir the memories or introduce you if you haven't been familiar with the 1970 World Cup before. So firstly, Rivellino's moustache.
I know Rivellino's moustache because we had a charity football game a number of years ago and I dyed my hair jet black and my facial hair jet black for the Rivellino moustache.
Yeah.
Also, interesting fact, you might be about to say this, but Rivellino commonly popularised the flip-flap or the elastico, as it's called, where you flick the ball
out
so you can pull it back inside again. That's Rivellino's trick that he made famous. But anyway, carry on.
So his, it's amazing, really, because this is his tournament, but it's the only tournament he really shone at. In 74, Brazil were a shadow, quite a sad fall from grace without Pelé. But Rivellino was brilliant. The left-footed wonder, unbelievable left foot.
Yeah, really,
which
really
is, you know, you can dye your hair and your moustache all you like, mate, but you haven't got a left foot.
No, I do not have a wonder of a left foot like Rivellino.
Rivellino scored a couple of goals, a free kick in particular, where the wall can't understand how it got past them.
Yeah.
Against Czechoslovakia. Amazing, amazing player, Rivellino. So again, worth checking that. Another one is Pelé's dummy.
Oh, where the through ball comes in and he looks so he's going to take it.
He just
runs past the
it.
Ball, goes round the keeper.
Yeah.
But the thing that I always remember about this is he doesn't score.
He misses.
He misses. Yeah. He pulls off one of the most brilliant, like clever thinking.
Ultimately misses an open goal.
It's crazy, isn't it? But yeah, that bit of skill is just like, it's you're playing 4D chess. Like, it's just unbelievable.
Yeah, it's such a good bit of TV. I think in a way, the fact he missed it almost made it more famous.
Yeah.
It's got to be, other than Gazza's miss in 96, it's got to be one of the most famous misses. In history.
Yeah.
So maybe Kane against Croatia. That one just dug deep into my heart as I thought.
Square
that.
The ball, Harry. Just pass. Sterling's there. He's screaming
fuck
at you.
Yeah, fuck you. Yeah, fuck you. What was that, Harry?
You okay there, Harry? I'm making a cup of tea. Fucking tea bag. Just calm down, Harry. It's okay. It'll be okay, mate.
So anyway, Pelé's dummy. And then a couple of other mentions of the 1970 World Cup. Gerd Müller was the top scorer. I said Jorginho a minute ago. I was wrong. Gerd Müller was the top scorer of the tournament. Jorginho got 9. Gerd Müller got 10.
Gerd Müller. Now, that is a guy who loved a goal. Der Bomber, they used to call him. He was unbelievable.
He was brilliant. And in some ways, 1974 was his tournament because he scored in the final. But this was his introduction and obviously scoring 10 goals.
A frightening player. His statistics at club level as well are very much like Eusebio and Pelé levels, where he is scoring pretty much a goal a game.
But it's
outrageous.
It's quite weird because he's a small guy.
Yeah.
And he wasn't particularly fit, apparently.
Yeah. Is that right?
Which is really interesting. I'm sure we'll cover more next week on Gerd Müller. But he was there, scored 10 goals, and ultimately scored a very famous goal to knock England out in the quarterfinals. England were 2-0 up against West Germany and cruising.
Yeah.
And then Gordon Banks got was injured, so Peter Bonetti was playing the cat, as they called him.
It's the most generic nickname for a goalkeeper, isn't it?
And he had a bit of a stinker,
right?
And let in 2 goals. Then Gerd Müller's goal was actually a really good one, 3-2. They won in extra time, and West Germany had their revenge.
See, like we referenced in last week's pod, we bring up when we beat Germany, we very quickly forget the amount of times that we get beaten.
That's more painful, I think.
Yeah.
So Germany went on into an even better game in semi-final, Italy-Germany, and we could do a podcast on this.
Yeah.
And one day we should do semi-final countdown. That's a really good idea. Brainstorm.
You're welcome, listener. You're getting led behind the curtain.
The Italy-Germany, West Germany semi-final was unbelievable. So 4-3 was the final score. 5 of those goals were in extra time.
No, that's got to be a record. Yeah, that's got to be a record. 5 goals
in
extra time.
Absolutely nuts semi-final. Italy scraped past a very strong West German side.
Amazing.
4-3 in extra time to get through to the final to meet Pelé and the boys in yellow. Brazil versus Italy, the 1970 World Cup final. Let's do the match.
Pizza Hut pan pizzas, unless I'm mistaken. Come on, Gareth, it only took me 6 years to get over it. Have some pan pizza.
So a very famous World Cup final, mainly because it was bright sunshine in Mexican climate, crowd, loads of noise. Because it was the first broadcast in colour, the sound wasn't particularly good.
Is that right?
Yeah, so they reckon they put a lot into the pictures and the sound
but
sounded
the quality.
Yeah,
was...
it sounded a little bit like an old radio broadcast. But in some ways it kind of adds to the charm a little bit when you watch it back. Brazil were like a steam train, and they started like a steam train, and led by Pelé. And again, quite a famous, more a celebration, famous celebration in terms of the photograph of Pelé celebrating, jumped up into Carlos Alberto's arms. So 18 minutes in, across over the top from Tostão, we'll come back to the most non-Brazilian looking man. He looked like Nobby Styles. But just, unbelievably Brazilian in the way he played. Just well, such a good
important
player.
That whole team, like, genuinely interrupt me if you're going to talk about this, but that team is it the best football team ever assembled?
It is
unbelievable. Like, Carlos Alberto, Rivelino, Tostão, Pelé.
And not just names.
No.
But they showed up.
Yeah, on the biggest stage, all of them performed, which I guess is very much what this final is about, isn't it?
Absolutely.
Against a stronger Italy team.
Oh, yeah. I mean, we'll come back to this, but they belittled and made small the European champions.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Who had beaten an incredibly good Germany team to get
to
the final.
Yeah. And so some, Italy, in some ways, and we're jumping ahead really, but they were shell-shocked in, like, how did that happen?
Yeah.
Like, a much closer game than they were anticipating, but Brazil were just so good. And it showed straight from the off. So Tostão put this cross over, and Pelé is one of those kind of looping high crosses. Brilliant jump.
Yeah.
Brilliantly timed. Brilliant header downward. Pelé wasn't the biggest guy in the world.
No, but good amount of headed goals with Pelé.
He was a very
complete striker.
And again, if you haven't seen it, go and check it out. He hangs in the air like Michael Jordan,
in his prime.
And way before Michael Jordan ever came along. It's ridiculous. It's a bit like, Ronaldo sometimes jumps, Cristiano Ronaldo jumps. And you're like, how is he still up in the air?
Yeah.
And it was a bit like that.
And he does the whole, because like you say, it's a looping cross rather than like a whipped cross or a bullet cross.
Yeah.
He has to generate the power. And he does that thing where he like arches. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Where he kind of pulls himself back in slow motion to then properly attack
the ball. Such a good header.
It's brilliant.
Such a good header. And downward, beating Italian goalkeeper, and Brazil off to a flyer, 18 minutes gone. Interestingly, which again goes against the overall narrative, Italy equalise.
Ah, so it's not a consolation goal.
No, it's not. And I thought it was.
Yeah.
But no, it's not. So in some ways, it kind of illustrates the point that they weren't there to be smacked.
Walked over, yeah.
Yeah. They were in the game as far as you saw it. So Roberto Bodensegna equalised for Italy after a blunder in the Brazilian defence. The weak part of the Brazilian team largely was meant to be Felix, the goalkeeper.
And that's probably why you don't hear his name mentioned when you go through the 1970s. Yeah.
Yeah. There was like some funny, they're not real, but funny rumours that Felix wasn't even a goalkeeper.
That's good banter, isn't it?
But he was just like an extra centre-back.
It's basically the musicians' jokes about drummers, isn't it? Where it's just like, how do you tell if the stage is level? The drummer's drawling out of both sides of his mouth. Just like, oh, do you want to wear some gloves, Felix? Go on, mate, do us a favour.
It's almost like a joke. Like,
he's like the younger brother of one of the players.
Yeah.
We're short a keeper. Oh, don't worry, Felix will go in.
But Felix, it's like a bet they all took at the start of the tournament. We can win this with that guy.
And yeah.
Felix, I'm putting that joker in goal.
And yet he walks away with a World Cup winner's
medal.
He does.
Fair play,
Felix.
But he was at fault, as was the defence for Brazil, to let Bodensegna equalise. And it kind of let them back in the game a little bit. And interestingly, for one of the most scoreline dominant World Cup finals, it was 1-1 at half time. And a largely kind of, the pundits, if you like, at half time were talking about the fact that we were set up for a great second half. Because it's 1-1 and these two powerhouses of world football were ready to kind of, who can separate
them. Yeah, sure. It's wonderfully poised, but that is so different to the narrative I had in my head.
Right.
Like, I knew the result.
Yeah.
I knew Brazil, like, this is arguably the greatest team ever, all this kind of stuff. But yeah, I hadn't put two and two together in terms of thinking about how the match had actually broken down. It's really interesting.
I'm gonna put it down as testament to Italy, I think. And then ultimately to Brazil.
Yeah.
But testament to Italy that they were a strong team. They weren't in the final by mistake. It wasn't Argentina in 1990 type thing. We're like, how the hell did they get here? They were there on merit and, they held their own for 45 minutes. But unfortunately, that is kind of where the holding their own ends, because Brazil come out in the second half and Mario Zagallo, who interestingly was the youngest coach. And what's the other fact about Zagallo?
He had won the World Cup previously with Brazil.
as a player.
Oh, yeah, sure. Yeah.
First person to do it as a player and a coach. Who else did it, mate?
Franz Beckenbauer.
Yeah, I knew. You had your Beckenbauer look on there.
In many ways, Beckenbauer is the man I wish I could have been if I was, you know, German. The only thing stopping me from becoming Franz Beckenbauer was the fact that I was born in England. But,
yeah, and yeah. Efficiency.
Well,
and
there is
integrity.
That.
Integrity.
And that. And ability. That's also one thing that did separate me and Franz.
Yeah, yeah.
That's often, Louis Beckenbauer.
That's often on the list.
To be fair, I think for those that do know me, the one thing I will take from Franz is that I love a rampaging run forward from centre back.
Yeah.
So that's the one thing I've modelled my game on.
Yeah, unfortunately, no one covers you.
No, and I often left the ball behind. Louis's gone up front. Well, why? We're defending.
You're like bent over, catching your breath on the halfway line. Right, sorry. Anyway, back to the final. So, yeah, second half got off to an incredible start with Brazil kind of like taking control. Their firepower and their creativity ultimately was too much. And I think Zagallo at halftime, he paid reference to the fact that he just wanted Brazil to play like Brazil in the second half. And man alive, did they? And that's exactly the Brazil. So not only, it's easy to say it was Pelé's Brazil, but it really wasn't.
No, yeah, this whole, it's a little bit similar to 2002 Brazil, where you had, like, obviously the story was of Ronaldo because of what happened in 98, but it wasn't really Ronaldo. It was Ronaldo, Rivaldo, Ronaldinho.
Yeah.
Like, they had this incredible attacking lineup, and they all contributed.
Yeah,
similar in 70.
It really is that way. So Rivelino steps in, Tostão steps in.
Jorginho,
Gerson. It's Gerson actually that scores the second goal. But it's after a period of almost like camped out in the Italian half dominance.
Yeah.
And you kind of get the feeling, even watching the extended highlights, you just think, they're not going to last here. Like no team can last, you know, this amount of time. So Gerson fires in a brilliant shot from outside the area for the second goal. And then he is involved in providing the third. And interesting, you don't hear his name.
No.
And yet he scores one, sets one up.
In a World Cup final, yeah.
And it's Pelé or Jorginho or maybe Rivelino.
Yeah.
But yeah, Gerson, who is probably more a defensive midfielder, he doesn't get the headlines. It's the curse of your life, isn't it, mate?
It is, mate, yeah. You know, you make an incredible tackle, and unless the Lightning Seeds and Badil and Skinner make a song about you, it's already forgotten.
Oh, dear. So, yeah, so Gerson setting up the third. Long free kick, found Pelé, or Rivelino found Pelé. Pelé brilliantly just laid the ball into Jorginho, who was on rushing. Jorginho had this reputation of being like a bulldozing centre forward.
Right,
he didn't pass.
Yeah.
He was that guy that always shot.
Yeah.
You know that guy that plays Sunday League, that whenever they get the ball, they shoot.
Kind of person that records how many goals they've scored in friendlies and like
that
pre-season
games. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Or training.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Very much so.
84 goals this season, mate.
Yeah. Doesn't count when you're playing against your kid in the garden. Scored a perfect hat trick.
Anyway, Jorginho was that guy.
Yeah.
But ultimately, he was
good enough to back it up. Yeah.
So yeah, he just had this habit. He did it against England, obviously, with a thunderbolt. He did it against Czechoslovakia with a thunderbolt. And he did it again here against Italy with a brilliant finish. And that's what he was known for. Just really clinical finishing.
Ruthless.
So yeah, he added a third. And in a sense, he said after the game that he scored the goal that won the World Cup. But the reason he said that is because he believed that that was the goal that ended Italy's resistance.
But sure, yeah.
As in, not like he felt that.
Yeah.
Saying that on the pitch. That
once that goal went in, Brazil thought, this is ours now.
You could feel that they were done.
Yeah.
And that brings us to the fourth and final goal.
Is it the greatest goal in World Cup?
I think it is.
Like history.
Maradona's goal is brilliant.
Yeah.
But that's a one-person goal.
Yeah.
This, in some ways, everything, and I'm going to get all purist here, but everything about what football's about.
Yeah.
This had everything.
Yeah.
And I think for that reason, I think that it's the greatest World Cup goal.
Yeah, I think if we had a vote, and for what my opinion and your opinion is worth, I think this is the one we settle on. Because it's the ultimate team goal.
Yeah.
It's beautiful football.
There's
something,
skill,
everything. Yeah, there's everything,
great vision
in this.
Is a brilliant bullet finish. Like
from a defender.
From a defender who just was like, I'm going to hit this as hard as I've ever hit a ball.
Could you imagine that we could have been robbed from this moment if Carlos Alberto had just absolutely punted it into Rose's head. If he'd really put his foot through it, and we'd never talk about it.
Do you think he was trying to do a Jeff Hurst?
I've just run all the way from the fence to get on the end of this. You know what? Let's waste some time.
So for those of you who haven't seen the goal, we'll try and walk through it a little bit here, but go and watch it. It's brilliant, absolutely brilliant. So Tostão started the move 5 yards from the edge of the Brazilian penalty area.
Outrageous.
And interestingly, so track Tostão, if you watch it. He then ran the length of the field, wasn't involved again with the ball. It did, you know, loads of different things. And then he was the person that plays in to Pelé. Brilliant vision. I'll come back to that in a second, jumping ahead. So yeah, Tostão starts it. He it knocks around. It's keep ball. It really is. You could hear the crowd. They didn't do it then, but you could hear the crowd nowadays going,
every pass. Olé, olé.
Maybe that's where it started. But anyway, there's a brilliant bit in the middle. Clodaldo beat 4 Italian players.
Is that right?
Yeah, it's great with step overs and like, you know, the jinxing.
Showboating.
Doesn't go anywhere. Yeah. He goes 15 yards sideways. But it's great. Yeah. It's great to watch. And then he very casually just lays it out. Rivellino then passes a brilliant ball, like he's about 3 yards in from the touchline.
Yeah,
he plays it to Jorginho, maybe 40-yard pass. Jorginho is about 3 yards in from the touchline. You imagine how difficult that is.
Yeah, of course. And then the control the other end as well. With the footballs that they were using in 1970. Yeah,
he controls it first time, turns inside Tostão, who's, you know, made up 70 yards. To come up edge of the penalty box. He plays it into Pelé. Now the brilliant thing about Pelé, and this I think is appreciated by passers of vision.
Sure, yeah.
That I would class myself
as. I was about to say, of which you are one of many.
So apparently, Tostão shouts to Pelé that Carlos Alberto is coming up on his right.
Right.
Because Pelé doesn't look.
Amazing.
And he just passes a perfectly weighted pass.
Well, that was going to be my comment, is you couldn't ask for a better ball. If you had to draw that on a computer.
Stride.
Yeah, if you had to draw that on a computer, it would land where it landed. Yeah. I didn't even realise Pelé does it basically no look.
He doesn't look, so it's perfectly paced. Carlos Alberto doesn't have to break stride. Tostão's just told him, you know.
Amazing.
Carlos is coming. I guess that's what they called him. Carly.
The great Carly.
Albi. Who knows? Is that the racist dragon? It is, isn't it? Yeah.
Albi, the racist dragon. I'm going to have to drop in something to make that make sense.
Yeah, that doesn't make any sense.
And now it's time for everyone's favourite dragon, Albi.
In the marmalade forest, between the make-believe trees, in a cottage cheese cottage, lives Albi. Albi, the racist dragon, part 6.
So anyway, and Carlos Alberto absolutely leathers.
He obliges. The ball is screaming, I need to go home. Can you do it, Carlos? Carlos obliges and says, certainly, sir. He ushers him with force into the bottom of the corner. It is outrageously good.
It's the perfect end to a World Cup final.
Yes.
It's such a good finish. Yeah. And the crowd explodes. The Brazilian players explode. They know they've scored a special goal. Carlos Alberto scored, which I imagine was kind of exciting because I can't imagine he scored an awful lot. Yeah. He was the captain, which was a big deal, I think. You know, it's like when Tony Adams scored the winner against Everton, you know? It's basically the same thing.
Yeah, sure. We'll go with that. How has Tony Adams got a mention in the 1970 World Cup?
I was just thinking, like, captains that end games.
I can't imagine.
There's many others that have done it.
Well, I guess it depends how wide we're throwing that net.
Tony Adams, apparently.
Yeah, apparently so.
So, interestingly, just back to the final goal before we head into extra time. The only outfield players not involved in the move, the Brazilian fourth goal, Felix.
The keeper,
who should be Felix the Cat.
Perfect. How have we gone this long without recognising that? Well
Peter
done,
Peter Bonetti guy? He never got a cat food
Felix
like.
The Cat is perfect.
There we go. So, yeah, the only two outfield players not involved in the move with Everaldo and Piazza. Everyone else touched the ball.
Well, yeah. It just, like we said, it sums up everything that football should be about. Absolutely astonishing stuff.
And with that, Brazil ran out 4-1 winners. Carlos Alberto lifted the Jules Rimet trophy, which we'll come back to in extra time.
you have just witnessed 90 of the most gripping minutes of European football you will ever, ever see. But the good news is there's more to come.
So the third title, if you've been following along, 58, 62, and then again now in 1970, earned Brazil the right to retain the Jules Rimet trophy.
So I always wondered, did they make that up when it was ready to, like when they thought, oh, actually a team might win it three times here, or had that always been kind of set aside?
I don't know the answer to that. I know the answer to the question in the sense that FIFA had commissioned a trophy that represented FIFA.
Right, okay.
Because the Jules Rimet trophy didn't. It represented Jules Rimet.
Yeah.
So obviously FIFA, being the self-important organisation they are, wanted a, and in fairness, it is a cool trophy.
It's brilliantly iconic and very unique. That's the problem. A lot of football trophies these days are quite generic.
Yeah, definitely. So they had commissioned this trophy, so maybe it would have waited. I don't know.
Yeah.
That's probably worth looking into, whether Brazil forced the change or whether they were always going to end it in 1970 regardless. But either way, they had the Jules Rimet trophy until 1983, when it was stolen while on display. What is it about this bloody trophy?
Football museums, woefully understaffed.
Yeah, it was stolen in 1983 by a man called The Pole. No, I'm joking.
I was about to say, we're turning into a conspiracy theory podcast now.
A dog called Pickles was seen on 1983, while on display in Rio, and it was never recovered.
Is that right? Yeah. I didn't know about that at all. No. How strange.
Isn't that weird to think? Like, I mean, it's probably been melted down, hasn't it?
But you would have thought so.
It just, for a while, it just would have been hanging around in someone's house.
Yeah, probably under someone's bed.
So random, yeah. So ultimately they still hold the title of Jules Rimet trophy holders, but they don't actually hold it. 38-year-old Brazilian coach Mario Zagallo became the first footballer to win the World Cup as a player in 58 and 62 and then as a coach in 1970. Amazing.
I mean, yeah. You would never have self-esteem issues again.
No, you wouldn't.
Literally completed football. I've completed it.
So I don't know if he was coaching 1974. Might find that out for us, mate, next week. Because it is almost like, does he want to tarnish his legacy?
Yeah, sure. Surely you go on a high.
Because the Brazilian team of 74 do tarnish the legacy. So, yeah, I don't know. That'd be interesting to know who was in charge. So Pelé retired as a three-time winner of the World Cup.
That's the way to go, isn't it?
I'm pretty sure he is the only three-time winner of a World Cup. Zidane won it once. Maradona won it twice.
Franz Beckenbauer won it.
You love him.
Louis Beckenbauer.
Won it once.
Yeah, yeah. You're right. Amazing.
Pelé, that's incredible. I'm not even sure many people have done it twice.
And you said maybe Pelé should be remembered for only two World Cups out of four. What's wrong with you?
Mate, he played two games in 62 and one game in 66.
Yeah, they still won. Well, they won one of those tournaments anyway.
Pelé retired as a three-time winner of the World Cup and a general legend.
Yeah, well, that we can agree on.
Yeah. So this is currently the only time that the winning team defeated the, as I mentioned earlier, the European champions, Italy, and the South American champions, Uruguay, on route to winning.
No easy draw there, was it?
No, the only time in history that that's happened. You can't say Brazil didn't. And they, I also should have added, they beat the defending champions.
Of course, yeah.
So defending champions, South American champions, European champions en route to winning it.
You just feel like giving them a standing ovation, don't you?
Yeah.
They did complete football.
They did complete. They completed the World Cup.
On hard mode.
On hard mode, absolutely. But unfortunately, I mean, it's not unfortunately. I think in some ways there's a separation. Maybe it's Jules Rimet. There's a separation between this era of the World Cup.
This is the first modern or beginning of the modern World Cup, isn't it?
It always felt like there was almost a cut between 1970. Maybe it was the English factor too, because England didn't qualify for 74 or 78. Brazil were there, but they were a shadow of the team they were. It was quite a dingy World Cup, the 74 one. So in some ways, the kind of colour and life of this World Cup almost ended.
Yeah, it's like it's the cherry on top, isn't it, of what the World Cup used to be.
Yeah, it is. Yeah,
what it became.
And in some ways, you could argue probably didn't return until 82 with the Spain World Cup, and then certainly in 86. Brazil, the most famous World Cup winning side in 1970, led by Pelé and all the rest of them, went down in history. And that, my friend, is the 1970 World Cup.
What a love letter to the World Cup, that was.
It was.
That was a great report, Ad. So all that is left for me to say is to obviously leave a follow and a subscription and a review and all the nice things that you give to other podcasts for us. But join us again next week as we talk about the greatest team to never win a World Cup.
Oh, yeah.
I'll be the racist.
Well, not anymore.
Dragon.